Hi, my name is Scott Bassenecker, and you're listening to Voices from the Center, Episode 8. Homelessness in America is not something often discussed, but it is something that touches most of us in one way or another. Here are a few stats to help us get our heads around the issue, and stats are really hard with people who don't have an address. Homeless stats are notoriously underreported. But 1 out of 30 children were estimated homeless in 2013. That is sobering. You think about looking out on a classroom, elementary school classroom of 30 kids, and thinking one of these kids could well be homeless. More than 7% of all Americans are either currently homeless or have been homeless at one time in their lives. That is not an insignificant number. I mean, think about a variety of other stats, like there's 4.4% Asian American population in our country. Nearly twice that represent homeless, either have been or are currently. Or people of non-Christian faiths in America. Think about Buddhists and Muslims and Hindus. The homeless population outnumber the population of all non-Christian faiths in America combined. Here's a curious stat. There are 5 times more vacant houses in America than there are homeless individuals. Now, people live on the streets or in cars or shelters or some temporary location for lots of different reasons. But that 2.5 to 3.5 million Americans tonight don't have a place to build some kind of existence is a tragedy, no matter the reason. And when mayors of major cities were surveyed recently, the chief cause of homelessness they cited was not drunkenness, wasn't drug addiction, wasn't mental illness, but simply lack of affordable housing. Now, homelessness isn't new. It's existed in America since colonial times. But for this podcast, I'd like to focus on homelessness over the last few decades. So my friend Jordan and I went to a local shelter to talk to some of our homeless neighbors here in Madison, Wisconsin. It was there that I met Duke in the lobby of the shelter, and he looked like he might have been the janitor or facilities manager or something because he was pushing a cart around. And I asked if there were people who'd be willing to talk about homelessness, and Duke was all over that. So we sat down at this table and got to know one another in the lobby with the 1970s TV program Emergency blaring in the background, and eventually found a somewhat quieter place, but throughout the interview you'll hear the chatter of others in the shelter. Duke has been homeless off and on for more than 40 years, and he had his own anatomy of homelessness.
I've broken it down into categories. You've got the homeless by choice, homelessness situational, and you have the transients. By choice, they choose to leave home. I'm one of them that chose, due to the fact of some situations that happened with my dad and my sister, that if I did, at the age of 16, if I didn't leave home, I would have killed my dad. I'm not proud to say that, but that's how I felt. Then you have the situational, which is people, problems came up, and they spent their rent money to keep from going to jail or keep from losing whatever, so they get evicted. Then you have the teenagers that left home because they were being abused. So those are the two that I can somewhat condone. Then you've got the transients. If a town sounds like it's a party capital of the world, the transients show up. And I knew somebody that was making $200-$300 a night, panhandling outside of the bar. I fall into the first one. One of the problems with being homeless is eating. And I panhandled, but didn't really like doing it. So I'd go around and ask a restaurant or some small hamburger joint if they had some work that I could do during the meal. I found quite a few. But then when I couldn't, I'd go what they call dumpster diving. I booked for the fancy restaurants, and I'd wait until they closed and they'd bring out their garbage bags with the leftover food, and I'd go through it. I have eaten stuff that would make a dog sick, but I had to survive.
Having been homeless for the better part of the last 40 years and having traveled to all 48 contiguous U.S. states gave Duke this certain window on homelessness. So I asked him about the difference between homelessness today and homelessness in the 1960s when he first entered the streets. And for Duke, homelessness in the 60s and 70s were sort of the good old days, even though the homeless community then wasn't so well liked.
The difference between then and now is, as I said, we had that camaraderie. If I had extra of something and somebody needed some of it, they'd get it. We'd sit around in groups and just chat, talk about how the day went, and shared our love for freedom, I'll put it that way. Because, back in the 70s, it was the quote-unquote hippie days. And we weren't very well liked. We were called vagabonds, gypsies, bums. But today I believe that, being homeless and traveling around, you can go to college for 20 years and not learn half of what homeless people learn in the time that they're on the streets. They learn how to survive. They learn how to survive without being violent. They learn how to care about each other. Caring in those days went a long way. Things have changed.
Indeed, things have changed. The 80s were disastrous for poor folk. To begin with, you have the deinstitutionalization of the mentally ill in the late 70s with these promises that new social services and programs would help, but which never came to fruition. In fact, in the 80s, it was this time of radical cuts to social programs. Instead, we have these enormous volumes of federal dollars leaving social programs and entering this tremendous military buildup with the Star Wars Strategic Missile Defense Program and other programs that had been escalated by the Cold War. So I asked Duke, what happened in the 80s when social programs were gutted?
When they did that, they created havoc, I'll put it that way. Because people got used to having shelters that they can go to. During the Reagan administration, when he shut down a lot of the homeless shelters, he put people in situations that they shouldn't have been in. If Reagan would have thought about it, he may have come up with a better solution. Spread the homeless shelters out a little more, or take buildings that aren't being used, refurbish them, turn them into shelters or into affordable apartments.
For many of us, the face of homelessness, which is most apparent, shows up in panhandling. Of course, this doesn't account for the working homeless. So about 20% of homeless individuals go to work every single day, nor do we typically recognize the homeless who are our classmates or classmates of our kids or the many homeless who don't panhandle. So it's a bit of an unfair picture of homelessness, but it's still one of the more obvious ways we encounter homelessness. So I asked Duke how he recommends people interact with that segment of the homeless population that panhandle, and also about what he looks for when he's looking for a place to sleep.
Well, like when I have money, if I'm walking down the street and somebody asks me for change for something to eat, I say, how hungry are you? If they say they're real hungry, I'll take them to a restaurant. I'll give the cashier $10 and I'll say, here, feed them. When that's gone, that's it.
So you give the money to cashier, not to the panhandler?
Because I know too well that a lot of the panhandlers, if they get money, they go out and buy booze.
And were you ever that guy who bought booze with...
Oh, yeah. I was that way for quite a while. But then I started to get sick and tired of being sick and tired. So I went through a treatment program. I still go to AA. I have been sober 28 years. This December will make it 29. I haven't had any, as they call it, recreational drugs in 32 years, and I don't miss it. There are mental health people that, if their meds aren't working as well as they want them to, they'll self-medicate with alcohol. I tell them that's not wise.
The majority of homeless that I've gotten to know are in a regular battle with depression. And there were parts of Duke's story which were just really sad to hear about. At one time, Duke was married, and he met his first wife on the street, and that marriage lasted only a month. Neither of them were really in a place to build a marriage. But Duke was married to a second wife for more than 7 years, and they had three kids. Now, a second wife he met through a homeless friend, and so she was part of a fragile family structure, too. And they were homeless as a couple and as a family off and on. But Duke had three kids that he spoke of fondly, Tammy, Jeff, and Davy. And after he and his wife divorced, he went back to the streets and remained in touch. But a tragedy in the family back in the early 90s plunged Duke into a deep depression. And you see him still living in that dark space today as each month brings these horrific memories or emphasizes some empty spots in his heart.
The hardest thing that I've gone through in the many years that I've been homeless, in December of 1993, my daughter and two of her friends went to a lockdown New Year's Eve party. And on the way, they were stopped at a stop sign and got rear-ended by a drunk driver that was doing about 80 miles an hour. Mm. Well, my daughter died because of that.
How old was she?
17. My kids were closer than I've seen a lot of kids be. And when Tammy died, she died in January. Jeff committed suicide in February on his brother's birthday. And my oldest son, Davy, committed suicide in March on Tammy's birthday.
Hmm. It all prompted by this death of Tammy.
Yeah. Hmm. And I still go through my rough times. I wouldn't be honest if I said, oh, I'm fine with it. Because my year starts in January with the accident and Tammy's death. Then February, Jeff committed suicide. March, Davy committed suicide. At the same time, Davy and Jeff were born in February. Tammy was born in March. My mom passed away, and that was in April. Her birthday was in April. But after I go through that, then comes the summer, vacation time. Then comes Easter, Thanksgiving, and Christmas. So, you know, I don't get a big break from my depression. It's like I'm working on getting the money together to go down to kids' graves because I haven't been able to get down there since I buried them.
Back in 93?
Yeah, 94.
94.
The accident was in 93. But I feel that I have some things I've got to talk to them about because I promised them I'd be there whenever they needed me. And I failed them. The worst part about it was I found Jeff hanging. And I found Davey with his wrist slit. No parent should have to bury their kids. I have talked to a lot of parents who have had to. Because not too many people can honestly say they know how they're feeling.
The tragedy of his family situation was partly contributed to by his homelessness, which he says as much by saying that he had to go back to their graves or wants to go back to their graves because he feels responsible for not being around as he would have liked. But his ex-wife also had a terribly dysfunctional life and her own tragic story.
I filed charges against her after I buried Davey. I went and filed charges against her for all three kids.
Against your ex-wife?
Yeah. She went to prison for a while, and then she messed with the wrong person in there, and she got killed.
But what was she in prison for?
Well, they got her for child neglect, child abuse, because of one, for what happened to Tammy. Two, I found out that she had Jeff running to get her drugs. And Davey, he was working, and when Tammy died, we went and just arranged for the funeral. We were sitting there, and she came in drunk. And she said, "Why wasn't I invited?" I said, "Because I knew you would come drunk." I said, "We've got it under control." She says, "Well, if you're going to do it, you can pay for it yourself." And Davey pulled out, it was working as a carpenter. Took after the old man, and wrote out a check for a funeral. Tammy's friends from school, they had a dance and raised money to help with the expenses.
And despite such a horrific story and challenging life, it was remarkable to me to hear Duke talk about ways in which he felt like God was caring for him. Healthcare is a huge issue for the homeless poor, and Duke rambled a bit about his many health challenges. But this story about feeling God's care in the midst of a health crisis really touched me.
I go to church at Calvary Chapel. And a couple of years ago, I was on oxygen at the time. And I was standing there talking to somebody, and all of a sudden, everything went blank on me. And from what I understand, he came over and I fell into his arms and he lowered me to the floor. Paramedics asked if I had any family there, and I was just starting to get what was being said. And a person from the church that I had never expected to say it says, "We are his family." You know, that's the thing. People do care about each other, and they love each other.
So while I was upstairs talking to Duke, my friend Jordan was on the level below talking with Ms. Lopez. And like many of the homeless, I found her perspective on God also, in the midst of troubled times, really encouraging.
But don't forget, we got a God. And he's the one that sometimes covers up and helps us in the street to open our eyes, you know, make sure we sleep safe, we get a place to eat. You know, that's why we got God. That's why we got churches when we go over there. Some churches do help us. We can't say they don't, because it's part of what God wants us. We're all family. We're all brothers and sisters, and we all have to survive. Well, sometimes, like I said, God helps us. Sometimes it's so small. People think that he has to make things happen in big, but it doesn't. Sometimes just by waking up in the morning and thanking him that we can eat something, you know, or be covered. We got a sheet to cover ourselves. Sometimes you go to church, and if you need help, God's hand is right there, and the person that's helping you is doing it through God's eyes. He's helping us survive. So some of our churches do help us. They give us what we need. Sometimes we can sit down and open the Bible and talk about God to us. And for us, that opens our heart to understand other people. Some people don't understand that we don't choose. Some of us don't choose to be home. It just happens. Some of us just thank God. Some just don't. Just say God gave up on us. Sometimes he just wants us to open our eyes.
I met Jesus once in Santa Monica. He goes by the name Bill. I was there with some friends, and our mission was to go and just spend some time with our neighbors on the street. So I went to a McDonald's, and I remember praying, "Jesus, I'd love to meet you and my brothers and sisters who are homeless." And right after I prayed that prayer, this guy with long hair and a beard and ragged clothes steps next to me. And I suspect Jesus was just having some fun with me by placing this guy who resembled some Renaissance artist rendering of him. But the guy goes up to the counter and asks for a glass of water. And I asked, "Would you like more than water?" And he says, "Sure." So Jesus orders the number one value meal at McDonald's, and we sit down. One of the first things this guy did was to quote scripture. He says, "Foxes have dens, birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to rest his head. You know I'm like Jesus. I'm schizophrenic," he quickly adds. "I know I'm not really Jesus. I'm not that far gone yet. I'm just like him." I think we've got this tendency to see the homeless from a very limited vantage point. We generally tend to attribute a lot of their situation to their own bad choices and actions. And I'm not saying that the homeless don't suffer from poor choices. I just think that my poor choices tend to have a softer landing in my life. Maybe it's due to a relatively stable home growing up or safety net of friends and family. But I tend to think with a different set of circumstances that I don't know that I'd be any better off than Duke or Ms. Lopez. Duke is one voice, and Jordan put together this little collage of his chat with Ms. Lopez and a guy named James. And so I want you to listen to this. And when you listen, I want you to think about your mother, your father, your brother or sister, even you. Listen to these voices and imagine it's you or one of your loved ones, dealt a different hand. living on the streets, little formal education, no relational or financial or healthcare safety net. After a few years on the street, having a variety of these awful encounters, maybe just a little bit socially challenged. So listen to these voices who just didn't have what was necessary to get that first rung on the ladder.
My name is Ms. Lopez. Just Ms. Lopez. I am 51. But I was in the streets for 5 months, and I'm disabled. I can't be walking around, you know, if where I can eat, if we'll go to bed without eating. Because there's places and shelters there. Certain times you can come in, and certain times you can go sleep. Sometimes they're full, and you still got to sleep in the street. And it's hard, because in the summer it's okay, because it's hot. But when it's winter's coming, it's right around the corner. It's so cold out there that you're sitting down and your toes are frozen, your hands are frozen. And you haven't even drank a cup of coffee because you're so damn cold. And it's hard.
I haven't experienced it yet. So that's why I'm gathering up all these blankets. I went to different churches, different organizations. They come out here and give people blankets. That's how I got all my blankets.
Half of the people that are homeless out there, when they try to get help, they're still treated bad. So they prefer getting a blanket or two and go sleep on top of a building, in a corner, next to a garbage can, because they feel they don't get the help they need.
Boise, Idaho is 20 below zero. I lived there for 15 years. That's my hometown. My name is James. I used to go up on a hill. It's called, it has the cross on it. I sit there at night and see the whole town of Boise at night lit up.
And the chain for us, for being homeless, is really low on the bottom. You know, they don't give too much importance to what we go through in life. It could be that we're sick mentally, or we just lost a place to stay, family members. But it's hard, you know, when you're homeless and you ask for help and you're still treated like low level. Some people get mad because of the word homeless. Well, homeless means you got nowhere to go. You're in the streets. Some don't want to be in the street because, like I said, some are just mentally unstable. Some are thrown out of their family. Some just don't got none. All we ask is not pity. All we need is a hand to help us survive. Just as much everybody else can survive when they got a good job and home. You know, they can go home, they can take a bath, they got a hot meal. So we have to survive, but what we got, we just want, we want people to understand we're not out there, some of us, just because we want to be. It's because that's what's happened to us. We're out there because things just happen.
That right there, it's my book bag. It has my wallet, everything. That's all my personal property. Those two bags are my personal property. Since I was 16 years old, I experienced homelessness. I'm 50 now. I've been doing this off and on for 50 years. I was beaten. First time on the streets. Just recently, I had my phone stolen right here off the grounds here. Just last night. You can't trust anybody being homeless. I refuse to own a weapon because I don't like them. I have a small pocket knife on me. I use that for cutting up my meat. So I don't pull it out on anybody. I don't believe on that. Like I said, I've been sleeping in parks, the woods, for 50 years. I don't trust nobody. That's just me. I don't trust nobody. So that's why I'm getting off the streets tomorrow, matter of fact.
Cool.
So that's why I'm packing up my stuff now. And then tomorrow, the rest of my stuff is right there in the corner. My tarps, two other bags, and I'm out of here. I'm looking for a place back in the woods where nobody won't disturb me. I'll go to the store and get something to eat. I'm going to camp through the winter. Getting a small generator, and I'm going to get a Coleman stove with the Coleman gas. There's my stove there. If I want some water, I'll buy some water from the store. It's just me. Just me.
Well, what happened was that I was living in a place, the rent went up too much, couldn't handle it. I moved with a family member, but in there, it was not just me, you know, she had her own kids. And, you know, I said, well, it's my time to go. It's my time to go out, you know, even though I was in the streets. Yeah, you have to, you know, sometimes you got to walk away. You don't want problems and issues in the family. It's better just, you know, walk away. It's not the first time. I've been here homeless in Chicago and Detroit. You know, in Detroit, I was with my kids. They were real young. In Chicago, my kids were real young. And it's not easy. I got four boys. I'm talking about young, the ages of 3 to 7. And right now, they're older. But the experience, they still don't forget it.
My choice to be out here? No, it's not. I don't have a place to live. I'm an ex-carny. I used to work for the carnivals. And I got forced in retirement because I have four vertebrae crushed. The fourth one is about this far away from my spinal cord. See, I take down rides. Okay, I was on the merry-go-round with the horses. Right in the middle is 90 pounds of pig iron. And I had two new people on my group. One was with me and one's in the truck. I was underneath, I was propping it up. The driver just pulled off and it crushed me right like that. The two tarps are mine. That's all I own. That bag of blankets, that other bag against the wall. I have two more bags sitting on the ground. Other people keep putting their stuff on mine because I usually sit here and watch everybody's stuff. I'm like a guardian angel to everybody. For all newly homeless, don't do it. Get off the streets. Newly homeless is hard. I tell that to every new homeless out here. If I can't handle it no more, I'm 50 years old, I'm on Social Security. I'm just tired.
It's okay.
Over here, we can get food. Get it once a week. Well, it's open on Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays. But yeah, as long as we got a little bit of rice, some cereal, some milk, you know, fruit in a can, oil, juice, they'll give us bread, they'll give us some kind of meat. We have certain things that if they use it the right way, you can survive on it. Some people don't know when you come into a pantry what you can get, you can use it. Some people don't know how to use it. Some people use it because it's a life they have to survive out there.
I'll be glad when they do that Black Panther.
It's good, you know. It helps us out. don't treat us like we're stuff from the street that you just pass over us. We're human beings.
Mother Teresa said that the poverty of being unwanted, unloved, and uncared for is the greatest poverty. We must start, she says, in our own homes to remedy this kind of poverty. Now, some of you will say, hey, giving money to a panhandler or someone on the street's no long-term solution. So I say, great, then work towards a long-term solution. But if you just don't think you've got the time or calling or capacity to work for a long-term solution, I say, give the person a buck. Or better yet, a meal. At least give them the courtesy of looking them in the eye and saying, sorry, neighbor, not today. Sometimes a friendly word will be food enough for a person who's simply hungry for a smile. This has been Voices from the Center. Thanks to our neighbors, Duke, Ms. Lopez, and James, who loaned us their voices for this podcast. Thanks also to Jordan, who hung out with some friends, and to my son, Philip, who stitched it all together. Until next time, grace and peace.